This has been a fantastic weekend for all of us. It was a fantastic meeting yesterday night. It has been a great meeting up to now. It's great to have so many friends here. And before I say what I have to say, I would like to again to thank a good friend, the Vice President of Research and Education at Dalhousie University, Ray LeBlanc, who was a great friend with Dr. Muradi Khalil, great friend with Nabil Saheb. He's a great friend of mine. He's a great friend of McGill, probably one of the best, like Nabil Saheb, glaucoma specialists in the country, and a great role model for all of us. Ray, could you stand up for a minute, please? This is the very special moment in our biopsy meeting and was rightly put in the program to pay a tribute to a fantastic man. When I came to McGill University in 1993, I knew personally only one McGill University Department of Ophthalmology member. And I knew him because he was an ocular pathologist with a fantastic reputation, representing McGill in all the international meetings that we share. This picture shows Ray Font, the second best ocular pathologist in the world ever, Fred Jakubiak, the third best ocular pathologist in the world ever, Dr. Lauren Zimmerman, by far our concours, the best ocular pathologist in the world ever, and Muradi Khalil, next to Dr. Zimmerman, the best ocular pathologist McGill ever had and ever will. And as a person, Muradi Khalil was just fantastic. I have the honor and the privilege to have Lula here, to have Michael, Andrew. Where's Karen? Karen, what are you doing at the end? And Karen. And for me, could not be more of a privilege to have you here. I'm not very good with words. I'm not very good with my emotions. Therefore, I have Dr. Nabil Saheb, who was very close to Dr. Muradi Khalil, to do the honors and present why we're doing this morning. Nabil. Yeah, I know. That's Nora's husband many years ago.
Dr. Murad Khalil, a dear colleague and friend of mine, was born in Port Said, Egypt, on September 6, 1929. He comes from a middle-class Coptic family in Egypt. For those who are not familiar with the word Coptic, this is a Christian Egyptian community that was established in Alexandria in the first century AD by St. Mark, and who can claim rightly a very old ancestry to ancient Egypt of the pharaohs. He graduated from Cairo University Medical School and later got a diploma in ophthalmology. He practiced ophthalmology in small and remote villages in Egypt, where one had to apply knowledge and a bit of magic to practice a decent medicine due to the limited resources. These years gave him an experience and a skill in surgery that was unique. When he arrived in Canada in 1967, he was accepted for a residency in ophthalmology at the Montreal General Hospital. The chief then was the late Dr. S.T. Adams, for whom Murad developed a great friendship and everlasting gratitude. In spite of his experience and knowledge, he never showed any feelings of impatience or superiority toward his fellow residents. He accomplished his duty with modesty, dedication, always with a smile. His stories about the volume of surgery, particularly cataract surgery, and how it was performed in the villages were quite entertaining. He was happy to practice in Canada, but his happiness augmented by a huge leap when he got married to Lula And soon Michael, Karen, and Andrew were part of the Khalil family. His interest in ocular pathology developed during his residency, and when he graduated, he decided to develop this knowledge, his knowledge in this field. He did it the hard way, with little financial help, and mostly by self-teaching while running a full ophthalmic practice. He soon started publishing scientific papers and became a member of prominent ocular pathology societies. He often had interesting presentations at these society meetings and became well known to the leaders of this subspecialty. He was the first to isolate a histoplasma organism in the choroid. He also developed a long-lasting friendship with many colleagues in ocular pathology, as you can see on this photograph. Mourad was loved by his patient. I know this because I inherited some of them when he retired. He was a very astute and caring physician and a skilled surgeon. He acquired over time an extensive collection of ocular pathology slides, which generation of McGill residents had the privilege to see and learn ocular pathology at his well-attended lectures. Mourad was always ready to participate or initiate a social event. He was a bon vivant and had a good sense of humor, and this created a warm feeling in this gathering. His love for expensive and exclusive cognacs and pistachio was legendary. I had the privilege of spending some beautiful and relaxing evening sharing cognac. Mourad was a kind and considerate colleague, always ready to help. Above all, he was the ultimate modest person. He died in January of 2002 after a long illness. Thank you, Dr. Bernier, for naming a lecture in ocular pathology in his name. I can see him smiling from above.
Thank you, Nabil. I'd like also to recognize two members of our McGill community, both of them that work at the Montreal General Hospital, my good friend in pathology, Peter Chouin, and my good friend in ophthalmology, Brian Archers. Thank you very much for being here. A very special man like Mourad Khalil deserves a very special lecture, and a very special lecture deserves the best lecturer to give that special lecture. It's a privilege for me. Let me take it back for a minute. I have three role models in my life, in my professional life. One was certainly Lauren Zimmerman, that you can see there. Second one was Rubens Belford, not this one, not that one, the father of this one, a dear friend, professor of ophthalmology, University of São Paulo, president of the Pan-American Association of Ophthalmology, with whom I share wonderful moments because of my friendship with him, because our family friendship, and of course because my brother, Rubens Belford Jr. When we thought about Mourad Khalil lecture and to make the impact and to make the recognition that Mourad Khalil deserves, the name Rubens Belford Jr. was so obvious to all of us. Rubens Belford is a great friend, is an example and a role model. He's certainly the best uveitis specialist in the world today, has served North and South America and Europe in any possible position you can imagine, from president of the Pan-American Association of Ophthalmology, president of the World Congress in Brazil, president of several organizations and corporations that actually helped young people from South America and other parts of the world to come to different centers, including McGill University. Rubens Belford's generosity, Rubens Belford's dedication, Rubens Belford's knowledge is something that we should look and follow. I don't know presently in ophthalmology a figure that has more positive aspects to show to us than Rubens Belford. gives me great honor and privilege to introduce to you Rubens Belford Jr.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's always a pleasure to come back to Canada, and a privilege and honor to come back to Montreal and to be with you all. Miguel always says the words that I would like to say and I would have to say, referring to him and not me. But Miguel and I are brothers, and I understand that and the meaning of these words because of that. I'm going to need probably help to go back to my presentation. I love to see Miguel here, but I think you like to see my presentation too. Thank you. Thank you very much. Great. And Miguel invited me to be here today and to talk to you about something that is not really directly related to what you do in your professional life, but I believe it's getting more and more important in all our lives. And since I'm not a pathologist, I really do not add anything to add to you in this field. Miguel and I decided maybe this would be something interesting for you to listen to and open for discussion. And I would like to start saying it's a great honor for me to be here today as a member of Biopsy 2010, and especially to present the Murad Khalil Lecture. After I received the invitation, I had the chance to go to the literature and to read some of the Professor Khalil papers, done some of them many, many years ago. And since the beginning, I have a very interesting and very modern approach to ophthalmology and to medicine. Not only the scientific approach that he started to have still when living in Egypt, but also the concept of internationalization and globalization of medicine. So I'm very proud of being here and humble being here today and presenting a lecture under the name of Professor Murad Khalil. Also, great honor to have members of the family here that I know represent the best of Port Said and also Cairo. Of course, some words to Miguel Burnier. Miguel Burnier, it's EPM, UNIFES, AFIP, NIH, McGill. And Miguel Burnier is Miguel Burnier. It's pathology, oncology, ophthalmology, teaching, research, patient care. But it's Miguel Burnier. Extreme has been essential for the education of ready many generations of ophthalmologists and pathologists, not only in Brazil, not only South, Central, Latin America, not only America, but also in Europe, Portugal, Spain, France, Asia. Miguel is a member of the most important scientific societies in ophthalmology, in pathology, in oncology, including the Academia Ophthalmologica Internationalis. And we all know Miguel. But we all know that Miguel is a person. Miguel is a family. And not everything, but almost everything, starts with Nora Lia. You will not be able to recognize Miguel, but you'll be able to recognize Nora Lia and myself, because we have not changed it. And here they are, Miguel and Nora Lia. Miguel is Miguel. Miguel is the family, but Miguel is also friendship. Miguel is a friend, is a brother. You have Miguel, you have somebody with you. It's an example of Miguel, Bob Nussenblatt, also another member of his big family. But Miguel is also alive. This is Miguel, the wedding. I was going to say the wedding of my daughter. No, it's my wedding. This is Miguel in my wedding 2 years ago, dancing with my two daughters. Miguel is alive. Miguel is alive. And Miguel is the person that you all know. And that's very important in science, in medicine, most important in life. I'm not talking about aging because I'm talking about Miguel. But we all age. And the large field of medicine now is involved in that. Geriatric ophthalmology, that means the medical aspects of aging. Gerontology, that is much more than medicine. Gerontology is all the fields of science that deal with aging. Medical, not medical, sociological, economic, and so on. Actually, aging talks about the future. And the reality is that we, animals, do not like to think about the future when we are talking about ourselves. We tend to deny it. We tend not to ask ourselves, what is gonna happen with me in 20 years? I'll be 24. What's going to happen with my wife? What's going to happen with my family in 20 years? What is going to happen to my institution? What has happened to my country? We all tend not to respond to those questions. And that's very bad for the country, for the society, for the institution, and often also to the family and to individuals because we have to prepare for the future. And very often, the future is not going to be what we want. When you talk about medicine, geriatry, and gerontology, we have to ask some questions and have to make projections for the future. And you know that we are living more and more. Average age would be 22 years. In 1950s was 66 years. Maybe by the end of century 21st, everybody will have a chance to live 100 years. So expanding, everything is going this direction. And we get old, and getting old, we start to face new problems and challenges. I'm not talking just about myself, I'm talking about the society, about the population. Of course, pediatric ophthalmology takes care of newborn kids, but they also take care of 20-year-old people. The same thing with gerontology, geriatrics. Of course, everybody is old at age of 60, actually. For many, everybody is old at age of 25. But no doubt, when you talk about 60, 65, you're not talking about a person that is 90, 95. And being prepared to take care of these patients is a big challenge that goes beyond us. Deals about the facilities, deals about architecture, deals about communication, many, many, many aspects that we must consider. Comorbidity is there. Many, many diseases in the same patient. Polypharmacy. How about taking 15 different types of medications a day? Spend $800 on medications a month. Dementia, depression, just been recognized probably one of the most important cause of dementia, a lack of cognition, is a renal problem. Can you imagine? We may be able to, I don't know, transplant kidneys and cure dementia and aspect psychiatric diseases in the old people because they are kidney related. The medicine is looking for all these questions. And we have also body instability, we have decreased vision, we have accidents that sometimes may kill the patient, we have shaking, we have less of memory. I do not want to make you feel depressed, okay? That's the joy of life. That's the joy of life. This, the gentleman on your right, the one of the cap, is a gentleman that passed away last month of July. He was the oldest person in the world. 114 years old. He survived the First and Second World War. And everybody was interviewed about the secret of his life and his good humor. People would expect him to say that he was, I don't know, drink milk and eat cereals. He said, no. Three important things in life are women, alcohol, and smoking. And maybe this was his mistake. If he did not smoke, he would still be alive. This people is getting more and more popular. Talking about 100-year-old people in 15 years would be so common that nobody would pay attention. This one, a patient we have in Brazil. She was born in 1899. Glasses, cataract, macula, dry eye, lack of hearing. But, not kidding, she still uses some cream to avoid wrinkles. Also, change of style. Old people continue to live as they want. Age is a big problem among Brazilians over the age of 60 years nowadays. And experience also is something that comes with age. Even for us physicians, we are experienced. Sometimes experience is good, sometimes not. I'm not sure that it's always good to have experience. Experience brings prejudice, and prejudice is very bad for science. Also, experience brings arrogance, and arrogance is very bad to science, to medicine. Experts are dangerous as a rule. You should not trust experience too much. It may give us too much self-confidence. We also know that information is not knowledge. These little chickens nowadays that we call residents or fellows, they know everything. Of course, everybody can know anything nowadays with a good Google machine. But information is not knowledge. Information is a basis for knowledge. But it's not knowledge and it's not education. Education is something completely different than information. Everybody knows that eating too much and smoking is bad, and most of the people keep smoking and eating what they should not. Education is change your behavior based on education, information, previous experience. That's education. This is what we have to bring to our people, not just information. We don't have to teach them anymore. They can learn by themselves. We have to be very careful about information, including the clinical trials. My generation trusted too much on clinical trials. Thanks God, now the medical community has understood finally that clinical trials are excellent, are very good, but they're very relative information, valid only for that piece of research, that population, that protocol, that inclusion-exclusion criteria, and they're very, very frequently manipulated by economic and social bodies in the society. We have seen more and more large companies doing clinical trials, well designed, just to prove their point, to make them sell more products. So be careful about clinical trials. Be careful also about books. Books should be like computer program. They should expire, like Mission Impossible. Probably the same as professors. Paper and PowerPoint take anything. And you can find support for almost anything in the literature, anything. We've seen more and more terrible papers that end up being published in good journals, especially mine. I have some papers that I'm co-author published in journals that I feel very bad nowadays. And the medicine has many, many examples of things like the one you see here. This is the 60s in the United States. Physicians go on the TV, and the president of the United States, the American Medical Association, goes to TV and says, a pack of cigarettes a day keeps cancer away. Yeah. Physicians would prescribe cigarette smoking. And we nowadays believe we know nothing, but our methodology sometimes is not as refined as I want to. And most of the times, we still have a rock on the table. And this is one of the important concepts. The ignorance of medicine is second only to medical or arrogance. And arrogance is very bad to science and to medicine. This is one of the worst ones. 1960, U.S. surgeon. I do not have anything against this gentleman. I'm just quoting what was printed. 1960, he said, it's time to close the book on infectious disease and declare the war against pestilence 1. 1960. We're getting older and our population is getting older. When you come to ophthalmology, we should not be proud. We should be very humble. These are the most frequent eye diseases, the big five. These are the blinding diseases. We're not talking molecular biology techniques. We're not talking about rare diseases. We're talking about the most frequent ones and the refractive errors. Not only in Africa, but many European countries, in most important Latin American countries, including Brazil, São Paulo State, São Paulo City. Lack of glasses is the most important cause of low vision. Cataract, age-related maculopathy, glaucoma, and diabetes. Glasses are needed for 100% of the population. Cataract, 100% will have it, as well as macular problems. We have a cohort of patients over the age of 100 years in the city of São Paulo. Dr. Marcela Cipio is the PI of this study. 100% of our patients over 100 years of age have less than 20/40 of vision because of macular changes. Many of them have never been operated of cataract because they never need it. The lens is still clear, but all of them do not see anymore because of macular problems. Glaucoma, this 0.2-0.8% of age of 50, becomes 10% of age of 90. So that's the spectrum of the future. And we lack knowledge, we lack medical information, scientific basis, and we lack operational capacity to solve the problems. Some of them, such as AMD, we do not have the scientific and medical information, but of course in refractive and cataract we do, but we are not able to solve the problem either. You see here some example, visual impairment and blindness. This is not Brazil. This is based on Australia and probably valid for over 90% of the population in the world, 90% of the population of the world. Of course, the patients get old. It's very much more complicated to examine them, to provide their medical care. And they're going to be more and more and more popular. So I have to get prepared for that. But you young guys are the ones that will have to really face the challenge, including take care of myself and the others like me. When you talk about patients not being able to use the modern medications and compliance, it's obvious that this patient is not going to be able to use one eye drop three times a day and the other eye drop two times a day and things like that, also because he has no pockets to keep the medication. But this is United States. These are pictures taken from one of the most important medical institutions in the United States. Very interesting situation. Smart physician. Just I started to ask his patients to use the eye drops and take pictures and make movies of them. And like 50% of the patients could not use the eye drop because they shake it, they could not open the bottle, they had to like 10 drops, one to get the eye, one used to put the bottle below the lid. So when we talk about eye drops, we think it's so simple. It's not. Also because this patient has so many diseases, and they lack cognition, they lack and sometimes mental capacity to follow orders. Many, many times you see a patient in your office, you talk to them, to him or her, they talk back to you, you finish the exam, you give the prescription, and then if you call his home, probably the daughter will say, what? He went to see you yesterday? Hold on, No, he doesn't remember he went there. What did he tell you? Many times, giving prescription for a patient over age of 85 is like giving the prescription for a 5-year-old child. Complicated, huh? But it's getting more and more known. They lack capacity to follow orders, understand the situation. So glasses is a problem, not only the Amazon. Glasses, reading glasses has always been a problem. Very interesting book written in Portuguese. Joaquim Murta is here. Joaquim? Okay. This is Champollion Mo Foundation. Beautiful. This is a Portuguese pope. Pedro Hipólito, João 21. Very interesting book that shows that in century, in 1583, surgeons were already doing surgery. Some very interesting surgeries, you see, plastic surgeries. Nobody would say the eyes are not beautiful anymore, you don't see the eyes. But it took many, many years for finally even artists recognized that reading glasses were necessary. This is the oldest, I took from that book, very interesting book. This is the oldest picture that shows a reading glass. This self-picture from this Austrian artist presents the reading glasses that she was wearing. There is no previous picture showing reading glasses. Nobody, because reading glasses probably been recognized as getting old for many, many generations, right? But glasses are so essential. Glasses are fundamental for the life. Cataract, of course, we're very good in operating cataract, but cataract is the main cause of blindness in the world. No prophylaxis, no clinical treatment, no trials underway. Surgery is going to be necessary at least for the next 10 years. And what is cataract? Probably to solve the problem of cataract today, only regarding money, forget about human resources that do not exist in the planet, we will need $160 billion. All we have about IOLs and cataract surgery is nothing compared to what the society needs. We talk about fake, we talk about IOL, we talk about premium. It's just adding cost. There is really no new value added to this field in the last 20 years. Retinal macular degeneration, well, if eating vegetables would solve the problem, we would probably not have the problem anymore. We have to go much beyond the genetics, epigenetics, infections. We know nothing about that except getting epidemic. Everybody has it. Everybody will lose central vision if medicine doesn't find an answer for that. We have Avastin, we have Lucentis, and for me, Avastin, Lucentis is like Avastin Avatar. Avastin will never happen again, never. The industry will never allow Avastin case happen again. They lost billions of dollars with Avastin, and they will not allow it to happen again. The society has to control the economic needs. The society has to control these companies and defend us. Glaucoma, other field that we talk a lot, and it's still not sure what causes it, how to make the diagnosis, how to treat it, and how to follow the patient. The most important thing we know in glaucoma is that we have to do better than that, much better than that, in diagnosis and clinical treatment and in surgery. And this happens to everything, even dry eyes. You see, dry eyes, it's not important. Well, it may be. The older you get, the more important dry eyes get. Not the benign dry eye, but it's some of the patient gets more and more complicated situations, and the zipper will not be a solution for that. Well, in my talk, I try to make a point that the challenges are important, but I think it's also important to bring the point that they can be solved, and they will be. There will be because technology and society go ahead. And it's very important that we understand it. But the only way to go ahead and dissolve it is to have information and education. Information changes very quick. 5 years ago, I would say that nobody was talking about epigenetics. First time I heard about epigenetics was Bob Nussenblatt. See, very often Miguel Burnett teach me new words, the same as Bob Nussenblatt. Many years ago, Bob Nussenblatt came to me and said, genetics? Forget about it. Why? Epigenetic. Uh-huh. What is epigenetic? The same as PCR, when Bob Nussenblatt told me about PCR. PCR, and then I got excited about PCR. Everybody was PCRing, PCR, IPCR, UPCR, PCR. Bob, PCR, I said, forget about it. Oh, come on. Now I get excited? Yeah. That's the whole of the leaders. That's what Miguel Burnett does, and few others do. And the only way to get a better education, the only way to get younger people prepared to meet the challenge is to have also professors and leaders and people such as Miguel. And I talk about Miguel. I talk about Miguel. I talk about McGill. I talk about Naralia. I talk about his family. I talk about ourselves because we all are part of Miguel and Nora's family. Miguel, you are very, very special. You have always been very special. Miguel, you've been in many places, and each of them you have added, you have contributed, you have made things better. And more than that, you are able to make things better in different parts of the world simultaneously. Thank you very much, not only for inviting me to give this lecture in honor of such important ophthalmologist and pathologist, but especially for all that you have done for many, many people and institutions, but especially from my own institution, the Escola Paulista de Medicina. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Rubens Belfort for this phenomenal lecture and this example of the preparation for the future. But this is not the end of this presentation yet. I have to have Rubens Belfort back here. This is from us to you. And this is for you to remember this, your lecture that you gave. He's going to ask one of the kids to take the picture.
I'm the surgeon. You see the difference?
This is for you. Give to him. You'll take the picture.
I should have brought my son.
Where is he? Bring
him.
Have
brought your daughter. Yeah. Where is she?
Yeah. Where is your son? Rubens should take the picture. This is. And there is something for you to go to carry to Brazil. And I'm going to read it. And it's a plaque from all of us to you, saying Rubens Belfort Jr., MD, PhD, in recognition to your outstanding leadership in the field of ophthalmology, the Murati Kalil Lecture, Montreal, Canada, May 7th, 2010, the biopsy meeting. Thank you. Picture with the plaque. Picture with the plaque. Not over yet. No, you stay here.
It's mine.
Yeah, it's yours. I'd like to call Nabil Saheb to be here for a minute. And may I have also my good friend Ray LeBlanc here for a minute? I don't need you. I know you're important, vice president, all this, but come over here. This is for you for your wonderful presentation. We can't leave here without memories, and memories are extremely important to us. The memories that I have of your father, and where's Karen? Karen, you have to come here, closer to us, please. Come here. And the memories that I have from your mother, being a guest at your house, and have to drive Fred Jakubiak. I was a designated driver, never drank cognac in my life. Fred Jakubiak did. in many occasions with your father, but your father was at home, and I have to drive him, and was an honor and a privilege. And I thought, you kids and Lula should remember this, because I want, as we all want, to be part of your life, as your father and all of you have been part of mine. Then we start thinking about what to give to you that would represent us to you. Okay? Should be a beautiful thing. You agree? I think it should be. Should be also a thing that is made for you, especially, by a very close friend of you. And I have asked Laissahem to give this to all of you. This is one of the Mahisahep. Mahisahep, for those of you who don't know, is one of the most famous painters in Quebec, in this country, and he's a Mahisahep. You're going to make the presentation, not me. If they don't like it. Yes, Mahisahep especially gives this to all of you. And I'd like again to thank you very much for being here with us and invite all of you for lunch. Thank you.